Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Cobiello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to mitigate crises and help teams get back on track. This podcast is about helping the C-suite leader to navigate challenges with confidence. For today's leader, I'm here to help you get back on track. Tomorrow's leader, let me partner with you to learn the secrets of the C-suite. Wherever you're at in your career, this is the podcast for you. Hello, my name is Deb Cobiello, the Drop-In CEO, and I'm so grateful you've joined us on another episode of the podcast for week after week. I find these amazing, amazing leaders to bring their insights to you, and I do hope during this conversation they inspire you. And I bring these resources to you because I sincerely care about the C-suite leader of today and tomorrow to navigate opportunities and challenges with confidence. And it is my distinct pleasure to introduce today my fantastic guest, Marissa Murray, who is a leadership development expert and the CEO of Leaderly International, an organization dedicated to helping executives become better leaders in today's rapidly changing, highly complex world. And she leverages her over two decades of executive experience as a former partner with Accenture and VP at Bell Canada in providing executive coaching and leadership development services, including Molson Coors, Pratt & Whitney, and Queen's University. And she has written three books. We're going to get into Blind Spots, her most recent one, but also she's written Work Smart and Iterate. And we're going to get all into that because that's why I brought her on today. I'm so excited. Marissa, thank you for dropping in on the show.
I'm so happy to be here, Deb. Thanks for having me.
And for my listeners, what drew me to Marissa was the fact it was the name of her book, Blind Spots. And while I have maybe touched on that topic with other experts on the show, we are going to go deep into this. And what I want everybody is to get comfortable and think about their particular situations. Are they experiencing any blind spots based on Marissa's insights? Or do you know somebody? If you know somebody who is experiencing this, I want you to share this episode with them as well. So Marissa, I give you the floor. Share a bit about yourself personally and about your career journey.
Yeah, absolutely. So you did a great job in my bio, but basically I started as an engineer after university, very analytical, worked in manufacturing roles for several years before I did my MBA. And then after my MBA, I joined Anderson Consulting at the time that became Accenture and did a lot of IT transformation, supply chain operations transformation. I also started to specialize in the aerospace practice. So I was the aerospace lead for the Canadian practice. And that was a beautiful journey from little analyst all the way up to partner. And then I joined, kind of went into industry as we jump over sometimes from consulting and was on the other side of the table as a vice president at Bell Canada, which was also another time of change and transformation. Before I started Leaderly, which was 9 years ago now. And what happened, the trajectory for me, I think when I started my career, I was obsessed about technical mastery. And then I kind of navigated to getting obsessed about business mastery. And then at some point I was like, oh my goodness, it's all about leadership. And I was like obsessed and fascinated by leadership mastery. And I feel like that's my last one. I don't really know. It's so deep and rich, and I really believe, I called my company Leaderly because I believe that's the highest compliment for a human is to be leaderly. That whole notion of your journey to your best leader is, you know, your journey to your best performance, your impact, your even your journey to your best parent and spouse and community member, et cetera. And so I'm fascinated by that thing that we unleash called leadership. And that's a little bit of my journey.
So I'm getting teary-eyed right now because I feel like you and I have been on parallel universes because I too started out as an engineer trying to do the best I can to get ahead. And then I realized I wanted to have greater impact. So I wanted to go into leadership roles for in corporate. But then I hit a crossroad, and all my listeners know where I decided to go out on my own because it's not just about the leadership, but it's about lasting that legacy. And I tell you, just even you and I right now on this podcast, we are creating content to help the next generation of leaders or leaders today who get stuck or are missing something for which we're going to go into your book. But I just want to say I'm so excited to have you here because I think we could share a lot of stories about this. But let me just ask you a quick question about you starting your business literally 9 years ago. What was that like? What was that crossroads for you that you had the courage to do it?
because I want to learn from you. I want others to consider this as a career option if you've mastered your career technically and from a leadership perspective.
Yes, well, it was terrifying, to be honest. It's a terrifying move for anyone that has done it, but it is so incredible when you sort of decide that you're going to specialize your offering to the world, like uniquely to you. And that's really what drew me to it. I realized over my career, I was very recognition focused. I never would have admitted that. But I was very programmed, I think, from an early age, you know, to get good grades, to get good in school, to get good jobs, to get promotions. And I was so wired for other people to kind of guide my journey. And look, I had some incredible sponsors and some incredible experiences. But at some point, I was just becoming less and less fulfilled in terms of the things that the world in the corporate dynamic was incenting me to focus on. And I really felt this calling around figuring out this thing called leadership, because, you know, at one point I had about 1,000 people working for me. When you have that, those kinds of positions, you have such an incredible impact on so many people. It's so not about you anymore. It's not about how you feel. It's about how you have to make others feel to enhance the capacity. And that stuff requires a lot of work on yourself and, you know, all kinds of sort of opens up all kinds of avenues. And the other thing, I had some amazing executive coaches myself, and I was exposed to amazing leadership development. But one of the things that I really, when I started to do my coaching certification and kind of sit on the other side and kind of throw myself back into school to learn these things, I realized that some of the ways they were presented to me, they just didn't resonate the way I needed them to at the time that I was in my own way, because I was kind of like, oh, that doesn't work. That doesn't relate to my environment. You don't know my world. Like, I was in my own way. And I think what's really powerful now is with my clients that I have a lot of trust with, because they know my track record and they also know my experience. And many of them are former clients in different contexts. We can kind of go there and they really trust me. I'm like, I know it seems hard to think about like the mindset you're bringing into this meeting, but that's honestly what's going to make the difference for you. And so the combination, you know, between my corporate experience and building my own business is quite powerful.
So one of the things that I've been thinking about what you said was, you know, no longer being fulfilled from the work. And it doesn't mean that starting your own business is for everybody. It's probably not for most, because it takes a lot of courage, a lot of risk taking, especially on yourself. And we may not always be in the right mindset to do that. But I remember even I was walking with somebody during lunch last Friday, it was somebody that I support, and they're no longer feeling fulfilled, and they could stick it out where they're at and perhaps still have some impact. But if your place is to remain within the corporate setting, if you're no longer feeling fulfilled, my always thing that I say to them is, what do you own and what can you change about yourself to either change your perspective on things? Maybe it's a good environment, you just haven't realized your place, or if you're starting to feel uncomfortable, then this is the perfect time to look and see inside. And where are you meant to practice your craft, your leadership, and your technical mastery?
Yeah, absolutely. And what I would add to that is, looking back, I had so much more autonomy to build the kind of microcosm of culture that would have been optimal. I mean, that's the sad news. The sad news is, if there's a lot of the skills and tactics that I work with my clients with all the time now are things that I didn't know I could actually do in a lot of these roles. And I say to people, like, it's really important that you understand the organization's values, the aspirations of the organization, that you're attuned to those and aligned with those. But you can't, that's not enough. Then you have to move it down to your team. What is your team uniquely about? What are your unique cultural values? What are the beautiful experiences that you want to create with this team? And most corporations and leaders have a lot of more autonomy to do that than they do. They just sort of default to whatever the system is giving them. And I think that the best thing in the world you can do is leverage the ecosystem that you're in. I mean, I laugh sometimes because I spent many, many years there, and they are a client of mine now. In fact, a couple of weeks ago, I did the keynote for International Women's Day for the office, and they bought a whole bunch of my books. And I laughed the whole time with them, saying, like, I could have done everything that I've done now, I could have done under the context of Accenture. Even it would have been easier to publish my books, because they would have actually given me, like, editing support and ghostwriters or whatever the heck I wanted in those contexts, but I didn't leverage the ecosystem. So what's more important is that you're playing full out wherever you are and you're finding a way to play full out wherever you are, because that skill development is, you'll be able to commercialize that value either directly or through an intermediator or through an employer, as long as you're playing full out.
We only have about 30 minutes for this interview, but I could see us going on and on and on about swapping stories. But I want to just bring this a little bit more forward, because again, you and I are just recently acquainted. You've got so much energy, and I know you channel it all in service, most of it in service to your clients. But what do you do when you are not in service to your clients? What are your hobbies, interests, other things? I'd love to know more about Marissa.
Yeah, absolutely. So I have two boys that are 20 and 16, and they are a huge focus for me. In fact, so much of a focus that I'm trying to learn to let them go. This is my development edge right now, because I have loved every minute of raising these boys, and I'm so proud of them. And they teach me so much, and I learn from them every day. So family is a really, really big emphasis. I have a wonderful husband as well. And we are big outdoor people on the weekends. So we're office people during the week. And then on the weekends, we always have to get out in nature and do stuff. So this weekend we were skiing. It was awesome, because skiing has been a little up and down this year, but we had a really great ski weekend. And so anyway, time with family, time outdoors. I was a violinist growing up, and also I sang in choir a lot. So I love the arts. I just find that there's something that lights up in you when you, and it's a whole different part of my brain that just sort of like comes to life and relaxes my analytical mind when I either play along myself or just listen to the amazing talent in the world.
And again, you and I are going to have more conversation after this, because I too, I pursued a technical area, music. If I can't get like a presentation done and I need to get focused, turn music on, it gets the brain going. If I don't feel like going to the gym, darn it, I got to get on that treadmill, turn on that music, I get focused. I played the clarinet for many, many years. I was also in choir. I think there is something so beautiful about being able to balance, you know, our technical area of what we pursue, but just have that other thing that turns on the creative juices and also relaxes you. So okay, you and I, we got to get back to business. Listeners, let's get back into the reason why I brought Marissa here. Writing one book is hard enough. What inspired you now for a third book? Because it's not easy.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And every time I even conceived of a book, I would tell my husband, I think I'm going to write a book. And he'd be like, is now the time to remind you that you said you would never want to write a book? I was like, no, now's the time to remind me that it's a great idea. So, I mean, I'm a very reluctant author. I wrote the three books that I've written, my attempt to really organize my thought capital and try to share it in a way that I thought would resonate with people that was out there. So Work Smart was the first book I wrote about 3 years into my business. And it's nine areas that I think leaders just fundamentally have to get right. And what's so beautiful about the work that I do and the work that you do is you're working with all of these people simultaneously. So it's so enriching to see the trends and what people are struggling with, what the environment and the dynamic is. And so I just felt compelled to kind of organize everything I was learning. So Work Smart is kind of like the fundamental areas. Young people really like it. Emerging leaders really like it. But in fact, it's written from the nine areas that very senior leaders still need to make sure they get right. So that's the first book. The second book is called Iterate. I wrote that book after I did a TED Talk, because the TED Talk was 14 minutes and I wasn't done. I needed to say more. Iterate is all about this idea of being interactive. So in contrast to being proactive and reactive, which is the two modes that most of us try to live in, I think that in this rapidly changing world, reactive is where most people are spending too much of their time. And it's very tiring. And we want to be proactive, but it's really hard to be proactive because the dynamic is changing so fast. So we can't do like 3 and 5 year plans the way we used to be. It feels like we start to try to be proactive, which is such a great thing, but then we get derailed. And so interactive is this way of sort of saying, okay, what can we be really solid about, like long-term aspirational visions, but not like all the way to goals? And then how do we iterate to it? So it's kind of this dynamic of understanding your North Star, but attuning every day and figuring out how do you make progress towards that. And then finally, Blind Spots was written 3 years later again, because I just started noticing the similar types of blind spots that my clients were running into. And I wanted, I mean, we all intuitively know that there are blind spots, but I wanted to kind of label them and organize them. So I found 7 blind spots that I felt I was seeing the most and kind of defined them and identified a whole bunch of case studies for each of them, because I think we learn a lot from each other. So that's why. And I think it's a trilogy and I'm going to stop. That's my statement for today.
Kudos to you. You know, I always remind my listeners is that if you have unique thoughts or things that you're seeing in the workplace, just write it down and tuck it away, because years from now, you may forget those things that were unique that you saw and you can bring forward into the world and then go back to them and then realize you do have a whole system, a process, an approach, a methodology, and do it at a conference or something like that. And the next thing you know, you have a book. And that's exactly what I had in the CEO's Compass.
I wanted to take a moment to remind you that a recent study showed nearly 60% of leaders feel depleted at the end of the day. And this feeling is a key indicator of burnout and makes it difficult to lead and inspire others. If you've ever experienced that restless exhaustion, you know why CEOs are amongst the most likely candidates for experiencing job frustration. I wrote The CEO's Compass, Your Guide to Get Back on Track, to confront those feelings and create a plan that is sustainable for you and your organization. I created a 7-point assessment that will help you figure out your problems in days, not months. And it includes so many resources, worksheets, videos, and much, much more. If this is you, please head over to my website, dropinceo.com, and click on my products, The CEO's Compass, and order yours on Amazon or other outlets. And now back to the conversation.
I want to come back to iterate. So what I really, really love about this is that I too have over the course of my business set, you know, 2-3-5 year goals. And then I would stick to them for the first 2 years. The third and fourth year, I kind of got derailed, still had certain things I was going towards. And I find many people that when they have a plan and they can't stick to it, or they don't achieve those smaller goals, you start feeling bad about yourself. What I'm hearing you say is like, but still stay grounded in what you're good on, evolve your craft, et cetera, and then be kind to yourself to go back and say, okay, wow, I have progressed, even though I didn't get everything done, and then refocus and reevaluate, because the landscape does change. I'm doing that right now and more to come. But I think it's being kind to yourself.
It is the first. So there's 6 A's in the iterative formula. And the first 3 are appreciate, align, and augment. So it starts with appreciating everything that you've accomplished, aligning with, okay, this didn't work, or this dynamic has changed. And then augment is, okay, well, what do we want to bring now? What are we going to do now? Right. And so it is very kind. It's about attuning, and it's about realizing the other 3 A's are aspire. So let's get back to our aspiration. I love the word aspire because it comes from the Latin to breathe upon. So what are we breathing into? So then we aspire, and then we identify, we assemble a plan, and we accomplish 1 iteration. And then we go back and we appreciate, align again, and aspire, assemble, accomplish. And the TED Talk is called Success Without Stress, because for me, that's how you achieve that, because it's not about the big success. It's about the little successes. And it's also about being able to appreciate, but not be blind, right? Align and add. Yeah. So it's kind of a fun framework. It always calms me down when I just remember to follow my own recipe.
So I got to read the second book, because I'm thinking about my own personal stories, those little successes, because I am just waiting for my viral moment, my hockey stick, exponential number of inbounds. And sometimes you cannot appreciate the small wins. I mean, just, you know, walking with somebody I've been mentoring and them sincerely appreciating some of the suggestions I made, and maybe in that moment in time, leaving an impact on just one individual. But you elevate one person, you can elevate many in the process. So I have to remind myself to appreciate the little successes, and my audience as well. Celebrate the little successes.
Absolutely. And you talked about like music to help you work out. This morning, I was really not wanting to do my strength training. And I just decided I was going to lean into appreciation. And so I was counting my reps, and I was saying, 1, thank you. 2, thank you. And I was thanking my muscles. I was thanking my body. I was thanking my heart. I was thanking my ability to be able to do it. I mean, being able to appreciate and take in gratitude is so important. And it robs us from joy when we can't absorb those little things.
Such an inspirational episode. Absolutely loving the conversation. But let's get to your third book, which I really want to celebrate here, the title being False Assumptions. So would love you to take us through a little bit of the book. And also what I'm really looking for the listeners is, anywhere along the way, are there actionable tips that they can do now? Now, mind you, I want them to get your book, but at the same time, I want to create amazing value right now. So early in your book, you talk about false assumptions. What's that all about?
Yeah. So let me just ground you in the definition that I position for blind spots. So I define blind spots for the book is the gap between our intention and our impact. So every day we go to work with a positive intention, or we go home with a positive intention, right? To connect with our loved ones, to enjoy our evening. We go to work to try and drive productivity. That's our intention. And we're very focused on our intention. And then we do things, we take action, and there's an impact. And there's often a gap between our intention and our impact. And that's where our blind spots live. So for instance, I used to run a Monday morning kind of huddle meeting with my team, my direct reports. And my intention in that meeting was to get everyone set up for a great week where everybody knew what they were focused on, they were prioritized, they were energized, and off they went. And my impact in that meeting, I found out from my team, was that people hated that meeting, it stressed them out, and some people didn't even sleep the night before that meeting, which was so far from my intention. But the reality was I came in with an energy of like, you know, get her done, like just this energy of being quick and efficient. I didn't let people say hi to each other. And I was very, very focused on what was yellow and red and what we had to fix, and not very focused on what was green and going well and all these kinds of things, right? So just classic, you know, my intention was to set everybody up for success. My impact was very, very different. And so when we get feedback like that, our initial reaction is actually kind of, we're kind of upset because it's so different than our intention, right? It's really hard for us to figure out like, that is not my intention at all. How could that even be possible? But the reality is no one's attacking your intention. Your intention is blind to them. All they see is your impact on them, and their impact, your impact on someone else, is blind to you. So that's kind of where the blind spots live. And I think the best leaders are always trying to narrow the gap between their intention and their impact. And the only way to do that is to ask other people, because our impact lives in other people's heads. So false assumptions, which is one of the first blind spots that I talk about in the book, in that just same example, that very simple example, I was running a false assumption. My false assumption was that people wanted in and out of there as fast as possible. That was just false. My people were much more focused on what's the experience of being together. How do we connect with each other? How is this meeting? They were much more focused on that. I was in this totally running this assumption. And when we're running that assumption, then our behaviors completely follow that assumption. And so false assumptions in big and little ways. I'll give you another example in the book of a really, really amazing client called David the Difference Maker. David the Difference Maker is an incredible standout business development person who makes the difference in the deal. That's why we call him David the Difference Maker. He's the one that always closes the deal. Clients love him, all these kinds of things. Well, that's partly true. That's the problem with false assumptions. They're partly true. The problem is that he ended up being in a mode where he had to be the difference maker on every deal. And he was burning himself out and he was dropping balls, you know, all these kinds of things. And so he was running a false assumption that he had to be the difference maker. We had to change that assumption. We worked together for about, I think, 14 months finally. So quite a long time of how do you make others the difference maker, right? How do you scale your team to make them the difference maker? So we have to transform the actions that we're taking so that we have a very different impact, leaving space for his team, positioning his team, coaching his team. And it transformed his experience. He's still one of my number one fans, sends me all kinds of referrals because it really transformed him. And that was sort of a false assumption blind spot.
You know, this resonates so much with me. And again, I would ask our listeners just to think about their particular situation. I do also remember I went to the Center for Creative Leadership, and I was put in charge of a group to lead a particular project during an exercise. And I was going like gangbusters, getting the team organized. And then they played a game with us, moved us to a different team and to do the same thing. So immediately I was moved to another team, had to roll up my sleeves and say, where did you guys leave off? And then continue to progress the team. And one person folded their arms and didn't participate very much. And when we debriefed that exercise, he said, you came into the room. I didn't know where you were coming from. I didn't know you very well. And when I could no longer engage, I said, you shut me down. And that took me aback so much that from now on and thereafter, I'm always seeking to get to know the people, their strengths, their weaknesses, their strong point, et cetera, and ground myself with the people and the relationship part before I actually get to the work at hand because of that same blind spot. And again, it's our programming. We're celebrated to get stuff done. We're not celebrated to form deep relationships and see what people need.
Exactly. And our blind spots are very often just the shadow side of our strengths, right? We talk about they're sort of tucked in, you know, you can't go outside in the sunlight without having a shadow, right? There's always a little bit of a shadow. And how do you become aware of that? And what's really amazing is, you know, habit change is hard. That's why it takes a little bit of time to build new habits and new instincts. But the changes that are being made are actually really small. So often, the thing that you need to address is super small. Like your example that you just said, I added to my meeting just a small check-in where people could exchange ideas and talk and say hi. It literally took like 2 to 3 minutes. And it made it transformed the experience of this meeting for the team, right? So there's really, really often very, very small changes in action, but it makes such a great difference in terms of the impact that you have.
You know, the other thing that brings to mind, and then I want to move on to another part of your book, is that you said that only when you get another person's perspective, when you have the courage to say, what'd you think of that meeting? How did I come off? What was the impact, et cetera? I too, when I got stuck in my career, I was at the top of my game, but I don't feel like I was having as big an impact. I went to that person, they were safe space, they were kind of outside the regular group. And they started giving me feedback. And she says, one of the things I noticed in you, though, is that you're asking the right questions and you're highly aware. And when you get that feedback, you move on. A simple change of getting an external voice, such as Marissa, to say, what do you see? What is the impact? Minor course corrections can be huge. And I always tell everybody, have the courage to ask for help, whether it's inside the organization or somebody like Marissa or somebody like Deb Coviello.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yes. There's, you know, lots of leaders talk about how the more senior they become, the harder it is for them to get feedback. And so a lot of leaders do benefit from having intermediators or help to get them really good feedback, feedback that is actionable. With all of my coaching programs, I highly, highly recommend. I really don't even like doing coaching programs without what I call stakeholder interviews, because there's just so much richness in the environment around. And in those stakeholder interviews, I basically ask impact questions. I ask, you know, in a recent meeting where they had a really positive impact, what were they doing? In a recent meeting where they had less of a positive impact, what would you want them to do more or differently? What did you experience? And so I get to be a little bit of an investigator to really understand those different things. And I think what's really powerful is when you develop a culture of being able to be walk out of a meeting and be like, how'd that impact you? And then you go, oh, isn't that funny? Like, this was my intention and that's how it impacted you. And to really look at that as a scientist, to just look at that as data, not as good or bad, just as data. And as a scientist, you always kind of have a scatter plot, right? There's outliers that you kind of don't draw the trend line with, but there's sort of patterns that are repeated where you're like, okay, this is a trend. So I try to de-dramatize. In fact, that was one of my clients' feedback with me when we did a 360. She said, you know what I love about working with you is you de-dramatize the feedback. Really what I do is I just look at it as a scientist, like here's the scatter plot. And then what are the small changes or tweaks that you're inspired to experiment with to see how that aligns the data?
Yeah, that's so similar to how I coach others, that feedback, if done right, can be positive and actionable. As long as we know how to frame it, you know, what can we continue doing? What might we start doing? What might we change to get a different impact? Now, your book is rich with so many different topics, but I would love to hone in on one that was your favorite. And if you think about all the different blind spots, what was one of your favorites that you want to talk about?
Ooh, that's so interesting. It's really hard to pick. It's like,
because you have unhealthy detachment, different views, outdated core beliefs, unconscious habits, pain from the past, mismatched mindsets.
I think mismatched mindsets is one of my favorites. Unhealthy detachment is interesting too. We can see if you want to go there after. So mismatched mindset is all about at different stages of your career, your mindset has to change. And sometimes what we don't do is we don't actually realize that our mindset has to change. And it's very natural at different stages of a career for people's mindsets to be different. So for example, I break up most of my programs in leading self, leading others, and leading change. So those are kind of the three pillars. So if we just took those three pillars and we said leading self. So most people are very focused on figuring out how to lead themselves. Now, we all do it through our whole life, and it always has to be part of our foundational success. But in the early parts of our career, 20s and 30s, we're really figuring out how to lead ourselves. We're figuring out how to be skill development, our own skill development, how to be competent, how to be reliable, how to be organized, how to be financially secure. We're setting up all these pieces of our lives. And as a result, we're actually quite self-oriented. And that's normal. Like, people get frustrated with younger generations because they're so self-oriented and so ambitious and all that. But it's very normal that the mindset of that period is really important. That's when you're mastering leading self. And then you move to leading others. So maybe you're, you know, in your 30s or 40s, and now all of a sudden the mindset has to shift. If you stay in the mindset of individual needs, you will not build trust, build connection, focus on relationships, create collaboration and communication and all those kind of sense of belonging and inclusion. So it's a very important mindset shift. And then there's a further mindset shift when you become much more senior, where you actually have to be more risk-taking. All of a sudden, so we get into this cozy kind of like, let me take care of my team. You almost become a parent. You know, I see a lot of leaders that are in that, they're mother bears, or they're, in my book, there's Patrick the Peacemaker as an example. These people that just really create, they do amazing at this leading others mindset, but now they're being put in a position where they actually have to push the team. They have to step into uncertainty. They have to move markets. They have to be, you know, much more future oriented and lean into uncertainty. So there's another mindset shift sort of in the upper leadership levels. And so what mismatched mindset is a really kind of a deep reflection of where am I in my life and what are the mindsets that I'm kind of attached to that I need to move through for me to be able to perform in the role that I'm actually doing. And I think the mind is totally programmable. The problem is that we don't always program it ourselves. We just let the environments program it, as opposed to deliberately sitting down and being like, what code am I running right now? And what code do I need to be running? And what I found in terms of being able to change the code, it's just repetition. And it's sort of deliberately telling your brain what you want it to do. And so I do help a lot of my clients when they're trying to shift their mindset to write their own affirmations, tell your brain what you want it to do, explain to them and have them listen to it over and over and over again. And your brain will come on board. Your brain wants to serve you, but it's basically just doing what it's been doing before because the context requires it. And it thinks that that's the right thing to do. And you have to kind of throughout your career be like, okay, what mindset matches my role? So the blind spot is that you're running a different mindset than your role requires.
Again, as you share your insights with me, I'm reflecting on my life and my writings as well. And one of the things that I write in the first chapter of my book, The CEO's Compass, is we have to start with you and your mindset. And it almost is another way of looking at it that, yes, as a senior leader, you need to look at, you know, risk and all of that. But I also say, let's go back to the beginning of your career. Who are you meant to be? What kind of leader do you want to be? It's almost going way, way back, and then decide who you're going to be going forward. And that has served me quite well in becoming the leader that I was probably meant to be, not what society and the narratives gave me, because I talk about that a lot. Don't let the narratives impart on you imposter syndrome and all of that, because then you adopt it and you become victim to it. You need to own who you are and how you think. Love it.
Yeah, I love that too. And I love that reflection in your book, because what I find is when we're more junior, when you're younger, we have our whispers are louder. And what I mean by our whispers is just that those whispers around what we really desire, what really turns us on, what makes us feel alive, what unique talents we want to bring, our whispers are louder. And as we make our way through the workforce, our whispers get really quiet because the world is so loud. The world is so loud. And it's hard to hear our own whispers. And so that reflection helps kind of recenter people back to, you know, what were those whispers? Because those whispers, the insight from those whispers will set you up for a fulfilling lifespan. I mean, it's not like they change. They're very enduring. They're very intuitive and they're very, very uniquely positioned to you. And so that exercise is beautiful to kind of get back to those whispers. And then now that I remember those whispers, look at all the resources I have in the world to actually make this happen at a scale that when we had those whispers before, unfortunately, we were still figuring out this world and we couldn't necessarily act on all of them. And so although our whispers are loud when we're young, that's helpful. You know, unfortunately, we don't have the resources necessarily to act on all of them. And then if you can rekindle those, which is your exercise, then you can just take the whole of everything you have learned and experienced in this world and combine it with those whispers. And that's where the third act is glorious.
And I'm in my third act. And I just want to say, Marissa, I so appreciate your thoughts, your energy, your insight, because that's exactly where I am right now. I am about to realize what I probably was always meant to be, more to come for my listeners, but it is so much bigger because I am in the right mindset. And I'm just saying right now, this conversation right now has been so relevant to affirm what I'm actually doing now. And so I just love your work. I want so many more leaders to connect with you. I'm just going to give my listeners the full title. It's going to be in the show notes. It is called Blind Spots, How Great Leaders, so you're already a great leader, Uncover Problems and Unleash Performance. Again, so aligned to the Drop-In CEO brand. Marissa, I want to give you the floor one last time to share your last thoughts with my listeners. And again, listeners, please connect with Marissa Murray, a great human and somebody worth following.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, thank you so much. I've loved this conversation too. I feel like it was way too short. So we'll have to be together again sometime. But thank you so much. What I leave the listeners with is there's so much to unlock in all of us. And there's nothing more amazing than sort of unleashing your next level of performance. And I really do believe that your blind spot is key to your breakthrough. I always have this image sometimes where we're quote unquote breaking through that glass ceiling. I always have this image where I feel like there's like a bunch of glass ceilings and you're just like, and all of us, regardless, we're breaking through one at a time. And I believe that getting curious about your blind spots, listening to your people, asking for good feedback, getting good coaching that helps you get good feedback. It's just such an accelerator. And what holds us back from doing it is that it's a little bit vulnerable. And so how do you surround yourself with the right people that can support you and hold space for you and help you through that journey? Because when you do, it is really key to accelerating your success. So I just encourage people to be fearless. And the other thing I will share is I did create this little app. If you're really nervous about getting feedback, I did create a little app called feedbackfriend.ai. You can go to the site and you just put in people's email address that you want feedback from, and it creates a report for you from those people. So anyone can be enabled to get feedback. And it might be the first kind of reflection that you can do to explain. I actually was testing it a lot and I was using it with my friends and my family and my kids and all. And I learned all kinds of things that were really helpful in terms of just reflecting on my impact on other people. And when we can see it just as that, as neutral as my ability to communicate goes through someone else's head, which has an impact, isn't it fantastic how diverse we all are? And isn't it fascinating how we can just make little tweaks to have a much more positive influence on each other.
And on that note, Marissa, I just want to say thank you so much for dropping in on the podcast. I am truly inspired by this conversation, and I know our listeners will, and I just want to wish you well and continued success.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being with you.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. If you found this valuable, please share this show with at least one friend who will find it useful and inspiring. When you share this podcast, it allows me to continue to help C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to navigate their challenges with confidence. To connect with me or learn more about the Drop-In CEO services, go to my website at dropinceo.com. And until we meet, I wish you well and much success.